I'd like to welcome Chip Ward now to the Wildside News. Chip is an urban librarian, author, and in particular his most recent book, Hope's Horizon, published by the Island Press, the wonderful Island Press, really takes an historical perspective on the emergence of an environmental movement. Chip, you've had a chance to really look at this ongoing debate. I welcome your thoughts.
Well, I think that the authors have overstated the case. I think that environmentalism, even if we're just referring to the large beltway national groups, is not dead. Overweight, out of shape, in need of a good workout, perhaps, but they're playing defense, and I have to tell you, we need defense at this point, and I'm thankful for that. It's kind of hard to criticize somebody about not watering their garden when their house is on fire. The natural thing is to carry water to the flames. If you expand that definition of environmentalism, though, it includes an awful lot of groups at the grassroots level that are very visionary, are engaged in bold projects, are doing a lot of very interesting things, and who are trying to reframe a lot of these issues that we're looking at. I think it's important for funders to take a second look at where their money is going. So often the large groups demand so many resources that the smaller groups that are engaged in more creative work do get kind of starved out. The Wildlands Project, for example, which I wrote about in Hope's Horizon, I think was working very hard to build intellectual capacity into the movement, to get a bolder vision going, and to unite a lot of the different things that are going on in the conservation movement. And they've fallen on hard times. So maybe a redistribution of the wealth is in order, but geez, you know, just because you want to ride fresh horses doesn't mean you have to shoot the one that's under you. I mean, obviously the authors were being very provocative, and deliberately so. And of course, if you provoke people, then you can't really be surprised if someone like Carl Pope replies and calls you out and scolds you. I hope that after the yelling calms down, that this is a useful dialogue, because I think that it's one that we need to have. You know, my own experience here in Utah, working primarily with grassroots organizations, is that they are underfunded and they do a lot of creative, catalytic work that really is important. It's important to play defense, but it's also important to nurture inspiration and the future.
In terms of defining this term environmentalism, part of the problem may be in sort of an overreach, a suggestion that environmentalism is dead. How would you define environmentalism so that we can usefully address this particular topic?
Well, you know, it's a catch-all term and it's problematic. And I have to tell you quite honestly that I don't like the term very much. You have to remember, I live and work here in Utah, where the term is pronounced environmentalism as if it's a psychological disorder, which is suffered logically enough by environmentalists. And more often than not, when I've heard the term, it's either been used on me as an accusation by others, or as an easy way to pigeonhole and label me, and not necessarily in a flattering way. I also am troubled by the idea that at this point, I've met very few people who don't believe in having clean air, clean water, clean food, and the kind of public health that goes with a healthy environment. And so perhaps at this point we need to come up with different terms that express what we're after here. You know, I think that just about everybody I meet believes in the wisdom of protecting children through child labor laws, and yet nobody refers to themselves as a wobbly. All the women I know believe that they should be given equal pay for equal work, and they avoid relationships with males who are, you know, dominating and abusive, but they don't necessarily refer to themselves as feminists. So I think that maybe we need to get beyond that. And I don't have the answer for that, but I think that it's a useful discussion.
Let's investigate some options. Everyone's talking about framing these days. There's two things I'd like you to think about. And first of all, are there other concepts or words? Because you are a word crafter. You're a very articulate man. You also have a terrific perspective. Bring those two together and come up with some possible words that might be useful, not necessarily to replace, but to embellish the concept.
You know, Sydney, I don't know that I'm going to be too helpful in terms of global terms that everybody can use. I can tell you that based on my own experience here in Utah, we created and named two different organizations, and we were careful about how we did that. When we were opposing the incineration of chemical weapons and trying to talk about the public health issues that go with that, we named our group Families Against Incinerator Risk, and we very deliberately put the word families in there because we understood that people who have historically have become ill here through military testing, their exposure to military testing, there's a huge impact on families and loved ones and community, and we wanted to express that. We also wanted the acronym to be FAIR, and that was because very often in environmental discussions about pollution, we talk about risk, and the discussion seemed to get taken over by so-called experts who calculate risk as if it's a math problem. What we wanted to indicate is that risk isn't a math problem. Risk is about who is put at risk, for whose benefit, and whether that distribution of liabilities and benefits is fair. So we named our organization FAIR. The successor organization was called the Healthy Environment Alliance of Utah. We specifically wanted to keep the word against out of that. We wanted to say we're for something, which is a healthy environment, and that it's an alliance. It's a collaborative effort. And, of course, the acronym was HEAL. I think that, you know, it's okay to come up with a global term that everybody feels comfortable with, but really, politics is played out at the local level, and a lot of these issues really get labeled locally, and we need to do a better job at that as well.
Certainly, some of the geniuses at word crafting, for example, in the current White House, apply this approach all the time and very effectively. That is to create the proper wording, and perhaps Schellenberger and Nordhaus are truly encouraging us to at least rethink that and utilize better framing and wording. Any ideas on how we may reframe this? You've talked to a lot of environmental people, and I'm just curious, you know, what you think they're thinking about this debate.
Well, I can tell you as an activist who tries to motivate people to reach goals that you really can only go so far with guilt, fear, and outrage and obligation. They'll motivate you over the short term, but people burn out when that's what's pushing them. People really do need inspiration. They need positive goals. They need catalytic visions. The Apollo Project is one of those, and oddly enough, the authors point to that as an example of a more expansive agenda, and yet most of the people that they're criticizing in groups were very involved in that project. I find that kind of thing exciting because I think that you can only motivate people so long to be against something, but boy, if you give them a vision, they're much more likely to stay in it for the long run. I like that idea that, you know, Martin Luther King said, "I have a dream." He didn't say, "I have a nightmare." And certainly he could have, because the situation in our country with civil rights was a nightmare at that time. But he was wise enough to say, this is what we could be if we work together and if we follow our ideals and if we practice our values. This could be better. I very much think we need to do better work at framing these issues, and I think that we're starting to do that, and I hope that this dialogue is a contribution to that.
As you look out, can you give examples of some projects, programs that you feel are accomplishing this effectively?
Well, I liked the Wildlands Project. I mean, it got beyond this the constant defense that we're always playing, which has to be played. It's very important. I belong to an organization, Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, that is known for its litigating and lobbying. And we have achieved at least de facto protection of millions of acres of very precious wilderness areas here in Utah by doing that, and it's important. But on the other hand, you need people to say, let's think on a broader time scale. Let's talk about not just defending those areas that are already pristine or have integrity, but let's talk about perhaps healing wounded lands, reconnecting broken and fragmented landscapes. Let's talk about putting predators back on the land in the landscape and protecting them. That's the kind of positive vision that I'm talking about. I felt that the journal of the Wildlands Project, Wild Earth, was a wonderful forum for building intellectual capacity into the movement, getting people to think of new paradigms and to expand the agenda. And unfortunately, the Wild Earth just folded. That's an example of what happens when the funding isn't there.
What do you think is the basis? I mean, why is it that environmentalism is struggling so much at this time? The concept, the movement, the term, and us.
Well, it's something that I struggle with personally. It seems to me, I was recently debating some folks who are more representative, I think, of the George Bush right wing on some environmental issues, and it seems to me that it was self-evident that, and in people's self-interest, that a clean and healthy environment is the basis for a sound economy, a sustainable economy, and for sustainable health. I then realized that some of these folks have a different worldview. They're actually sort of looking forward to the apocalypse. They believe that biblical prophecy will come true, that the righteous are going to be lifted into heaven. And so when I say, geez, you're heading for a very self-destructive path, they don't really share that point of view. So I think I need to think more about that. I think that we need to give young people more opportunities to connect to the land. Almost everybody I've met who is involved in environmental activism can point to an experience in childhood when they were playing in a brook or a meadow or a favorite place or went on a trip, and they had some kind of experience in the natural world that affected them deeply. And I'm afraid that fewer and fewer people are getting that. So I think that we need to work on our future cadre by giving children more opportunities for that. I mean, everybody wants a computer in the classroom. Nobody's talking about putting gardens in there. Children learn about how to balance the books. They don't ever do any bird watching. We need to start building that into our consciousness for the long run. Other than that, Sydney, I'm an activist at heart, and my philosophy is basically you start many fires, and most of them go out, and when they don't, you blow on them. And so I'm not at all worried about trying many, many different things and sometimes failing. I think that that's part of the process of building a creative movement that will last. Sydney, it's interesting that we, those of us who feel that we have some affinity and understanding of the natural world, very much respect diversity. We see it as a way that nature is resilient and as a sign of health. I think diversity within our own movement is also important and can also be tolerated. Many different paths are available to us, and we should try as many as we can.
To a large extent, what we're talking about is somehow healing some sort of unique rift that's happening, possibly because of the sense of defeat. I think that's part of this. We're kind of licking our wounds right now. If you were to look out and sort of envision an American environmental movement, which is kind of what we have to craft in America, and then, of course, there's the global environmental movement. But part of our problem, and certainly what Schellenberger and Nordhaus opened in terms of a debate, was the fact that we're failing at the global level as well in terms of global warming, which is an enormous challenge. How do we unite an American vision and as well a global vision?
Well, I don't have an answer. I don't have a formula. I don't have an equation, and I don't have something that I could easily summarize or convey. I think that you roll up your sleeves and you're determined to do it, and you start doing it, and you start talking about how to do it. And this is part of the process. I think one of the things that this debate has made evident is that we often in the environmental, so-called environmental movement, conservation movement, don't have good forums for discussing these things, and we need to create that. And I hope that that's what we're doing, perhaps on the Wildside News or in Grist Magazine. And that's part of the process as well. When we talk about the failure to deal with global warming and so forth, I think in America we're certainly failing to do that. When I look to Europe, I see that they're much farther ahead than us. They're starting to implement the precautionary principle. They seem to acknowledge global warming. They seem to be making commitments a lot easier than we do. And let's not forget that it's not just the environmental side here in America that's failing. We're not doing very well in terms of civil liberties. We're not doing very well in terms of taking care of the poor among us. there's a lot of progressive issues and a lot of important issues where we're also falling down and failing. It's not just on the environmental side.
Looking out 10 years, are you hopeful?
I am always hopeful. I don't believe hopeful. I don't think hope is an accident or an attitude. I think hope is a choice. And, very often it's what you choose to look at. You can look at the defeats, you can look at the frustrations, and you certainly need to do that and be mindful. I don't want to be Pollyanna here, but on the other hand, we do need to look at some of the progress we've made. I got a collection of books the other day from a patron at our library, wanted to donate them. They were books from the 1950s on forest management, wildlife management, and so forth. I went through the index looking for common terms that we all use today, like niche, habitat, keystone species, and so forth, and I was amazed. I couldn't find any of those terms in there. We've had really a revolution in how we understand our place in the world. The fact that we are reintroducing wolves into Western landscapes is amazing. Our grandparents would have found that unfathomable. The fact that we are talking about the precautionary principle, which is a revolutionary idea that puts the burden of proof on industry and corporations rather on victims who live downwind. These are all important developments, and they're significant. We shouldn't ignore that we have some success as well. As a librarian, which is the other hat I wear in life, we believe just very strongly in the importance of civic dialogues, of people being inclusive and open as they talk to each other. And I think that, again, after the yelling has ended here on this debate, we need to have some serious discussions, and we need to do it in a civil way. I am also sort of a refugee of the 60s, and I remember the divisive and factional arguments that went on and how people turned on one another. We need to avoid doing that. This movement not only needs to find new directions, to frame its issues differently, it also needs to learn how to talk to itself, and that's a sign of maturity, and that's part of the solution as well.
Well, that certainly is what the Wildside News and the Voice of the Earth, which is the expanded vision of the Wildside News, which you've just contributed to, is all about. Chip Ward, I want to thank you for your thoughts and sharing your wisdom on this debate on the Wildside News. Also, please give us websites that you feel people should know about.
Well, the one that I like is the local one, which is for Heal Utah, www.healutah.org, to learn about some of the issues we have here in the West about the dumping of radioactive waste and nuclear waste out here. It's a national issue, and it often takes place sort of out of sight out here in the more remote regions of the West, so I urge people to go there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sydney. It's always a pleasure.